It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pennsylvanians who qualify for the Federal Lost Wages Assistance Program should be getting their first checks this week. That's according to State Labor and Industry Secretary Jerry Oleksiak. The extra $300 a week payments come from FEMA, which told states that the qualifying period would be August 1st to September 5th, not the end of the year, which was expected. Secretary Oleksiak, welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Ted.
Mr. Secretary, when did FEMA tell you that this $300 a week program would only be for 6 weeks and not for the several months?
That was last week we learned that. I don't remember the exact day. It was early last week we heard from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that the program would be ending effective the week of Saturday, September 5th.
Were you surprised?
Sir? I was surprised that it happened that quickly. And we've been saying all along that this was, we knew, and we've advertised it as a temporary federal benefit program. It really wasn't a true unemployment program. It's funded not through the Department of Labor as traditional unemployment compensation is and the money under the CARES Act was, but through FEMA. We knew that it was a poor replacement for the $600 that had been part of the CARES Act through the federal pandemic unemployment compensation.
We have heard that some people received emails that the program, this program, only covers 3 weeks. Is that have to do with partial eligibility or what?
No, that's news to me, and we will have our staff look into that. But there are eligibility requirements, and it gets into the weeds a little bit, but it's worth explaining. You needed to be receiving at least $100 a week in benefits through that's unemployment benefits and also a dependents allowance, had to total $100. And that benefit would come through regular unemployment, pandemic, emergency unemployment, compensation program, PUA, the PUA program, which is the program for people who are not traditionally eligible for unemployment, the Pennsylvania Extended Benefits Program, short-time compensation program, and the trade readjustment allowance. There are several areas there where if you're receiving benefits through any of those programs, then you are eligible. People who were receiving traditional unemployment or some of the other examples that I mentioned did have to certify on, they had to go to uc.pa.gov/cert. So uc.pa.gov/cert. That they were impacted by COVID, that the reason people who were on the PUA program or in the shared work program did not have to do that, they've already done that or their employer has done it, but everyone else had to certify. It's possible that people were told they were only eligible for 3 weeks because of their individual employment situation. So that could be what that's about.
You mentioned this week that the state is getting a total of $2.8 billion from FEMA. How quickly do you expect that money to run dry? You said that people should apply ASAP. Do you expect that some eligible applicants will not receive assistance due to a lack of overall funds?
Unfortunately, that is possible. That's why we are encouraging everyone who is eligible to apply as quickly as possible. You know, we've already begun paying benefits in a lump sum for those the weeks that people are eligible. It's very possible that we may not have enough funds through the program to provide benefits to everyone who could qualify.
You have received approval to borrow $2.8 billion over 3 months from the federal government to bolster the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund, a zero interest loan. What will that money allow you to do?
That will allow us to pay traditional unemployment compensation funds. That trust fund, we were well on our way to being solvent. We had to have 250% of assets compared to anticipated liabilities. And we were well on the way to doing that at some point this summer or early fall when the pandemic hit. We've seen record unemployment levels. So we knew that we were going to have to borrow money from the federal government. We have applied for those dollars. And it's similar to a revolving line of credit. As we need those dollars, we will you know, tap into that source. And we actually are doing that for the first time this week.
As you well know, people are not returning to work quickly. The state's unemployment rate, 13-14%, just double digits. Aren't folks going to need assistance for a while?
Yes, absolutely. And I can tell you as an agency, we are doing all we can to make sure that people get the benefits that they are entitled to. But again, a lot of this is federal dollars. The CARES Act will be coming to an end, the end of the calendar year. That's where the help needs to come from.
Well, if you could get on the phone with President Trump, with congressional leaders, what would you tell them about what unemployed Pennsylvanians need?
I would, you know, I think I'd get Senator McConnell, Speaker Pelosi, and the president in a room and tell them just exactly how this is impacting the citizens of Pennsylvania. They need to understand, and I think many of them do. Sometimes the president may have issues seeing this, and some of his colleagues in the Senate. But I think that, you know, these are real people at the end of the process. This is not just numbers. These are human beings, our fellow citizens, many of them unemployed through no fault of their own. Most of them, almost all of them, through no fault of their own. They don't want to be unemployed. They want to go to work. They're not looking for a handout. They're looking for help from the federal government and the state government. And we don't have the funds. The federal government, they can get those funds. And they need to be responsive to the immediate needs of the citizens of Pennsylvania and the country. These needs are immediate. People need to pay their bills today. They need to feed their family today. They need to put gas in their car today.
Jerry Oleksiak is the Secretary of Pennsylvania's Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Secretary, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Across the country, more than 500,000 ballots were rejected in presidential primaries. The rejections ranged from issues with signatures to security envelopes to how the ballot was received. We're looking at how to make sure your vote counts. Andy Zeffi is the Allegheny County Solicitor. Welcome, Andy. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to be here.
Andy, to start with, do you think that voting, especially this year, with a pandemic, with multiple lawsuits in courts, is complicated?
It can certainly appear that way. I think if a voter really focuses on the fact that the access to the ballot box is easier with more options today than it ever has been, and you kind of have to filter out a lot of the noise and just focus on what your options are, I don't think it should be all that complicated if you can block some of that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the multiple options, which can be convenient, but for longtime voters, they are so used to going to the polls on election day. So what resources does the county offer, maybe to help guide people clearly through the voting process of here are your options? You don't necessarily have to go to the polls that day.
Right. And it should be stressed, too, that that is an option for November. All 1,300 plus polling places will be open. So if people want to use that option, they can. Also, for the first time in a general election, this was available in the primary and available for this general and going forward, is the option for mail-in voting. No excuse mail-in voting. Voters can go to votespa.com. That's the state's elections website, and apply for a mail-in application if they haven't done so already with the one they received in the mail from the county. Submit that application, and once ballots are finalized, they'll be mailed out. And as long as people comply with the directions on those mail-in ballots, I encourage them to do so, to read it very carefully and submit them back timely. The deadline for getting them back is 8 p.m. Election Day, but I encourage people to get them back as soon as they can possibly get them back. It should be a pretty clean and neat process, we're hoping.
What's the difference between a mail-in ballot and an absentee ballot? In past years, we'd just talk about absentee ballots.
Right.
But now with mail-in ballots, what's the real difference?
The real difference for you and me, a person on the street, is that there isn't one anymore. The legal difference is that the Pennsylvania Constitution has an absentee ballot provision. So when mail-in balloting was passed with Act 77 in 2019, they didn't do a constitutional amendment, which was a much more involved process. They just added mail-in voting. So we can't do away with absentee voting because it's in our constitution. So there it sits, and we have to, it still has to exist and be accounted for and provided to voters. But as a practical matter, again, there's really no reason to apply for an absentee ballot because you can apply and mail by mail-in vote without an excuse, whether you're here or somewhere else.
What if somebody applies for a mail-in or an absentee ballot, but they actually change their minds and want to vote in person?
Right. That is an option. What they have to do in that case is when they receive their mail-in or absentee ballot with all the envelopes, bring all of that to your polling place where you usually vote. And that all has to be submitted to the poll workers there at your polling place so it can be spoiled, because the poll books there, the lists, will show that you had applied for and received either an absentee or mail-in ballot. So if you don't bring that all with you so it can be spoiled or set aside, then you would have to vote provisionally.
What are particularly important things you'd want to emphasize that the voter needs to get right on that mail-in ballot?
So in terms of the application, you just want to make sure you fill it all out with your complete name and all the information as it appears on your registration. You want to do it timely and far in advance of the deadline as you can do it. Once you receive your ballot, you want to read and follow those instructions very carefully. You must sign. There's two envelopes that'll come. One is your secrecy envelope. That's the envelope your ballot will go into. That envelope will then go into what's called a declaration envelope, which is actually what goes in the mail. You sign that envelope. One thing we want to stress to people for your secrecy envelope is don't write anything on it. Don't write any thank you notes or put any stickers with your name and address on it or anything that could identify you. That's what the outer envelope is for. So just follow those instructions carefully. And don't subject your ballot to any kind of challenge. And if you follow those instructions, there shouldn't be any issues with it.
Some counties use different drop-off sites for mail-in ballots for the June primary. That practice, as we all know, is at the heart of some lawsuits now before the state Supreme Court. Will Allegheny County use drop-off sites if the state Supreme Court gives the go-ahead?
That is the plan. Currently, there will be a proposal being presented to the Board of Elections at their meeting on Thursday here, the 17th, where it's going to be proposed to use a number of additional offices around the county that are going to be open on specific dates and times. Those offices can be used for both applying for a mail-in ballot, receiving there on the spot, completing, putting in your envelopes and returning right there on the spot, or you can use those locations as a ballot return site to bring your ballot back. It should be stressed, and people should know, you can only return your own ballot. You can't gather up your friends and neighbors' ballots and bring them back. Everyone has to bring back their own ballots.
But you can get authorization to drop off another ballot if the person is maybe physically unable to do so?
That's right. And those forms are also available online through the votespa.com website.
Andy Zeffi is the Allegheny County Solicitor. Andy, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Many small and mid-sized nonprofit groups use online ticketing agencies. But arts organizations in Pittsburgh say they're among hundreds harmed when one such service didn't uphold its end of the deal. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll reports.
Back in February, theater company Stage 62 presented Goodnight Moon in Carnegie. The musical adaptation of the children's classic had 6 performances. A couple weeks later, Stage 62 received checks for the ticket revenue from a company called Brown Paper Tickets. The troupe had used the service for years, and this was standard practice. Only this time, something went wrong.
So when I went to the bank and went to deposit that money, it bounced.
That's Stage 62 president, Seth Laidlaw.
And so that's when we first found out about the issue.
The issue was that Stage 62 wasn't alone. Hundreds of groups around the U.S. and even overseas say Brown Paper Tickets has failed to pay them money they were owed.
And we were really shocked when this happened.
How much money? For individual groups, the amounts are substantial. Stage 62 says it's owed about $8,000. That's also how much Beth Corning claims to be out. In March, Corning's dance theater troupe postponed a show because of coronavirus. Corning asked patrons to keep their tickets rather than seek refunds to help fund the troupe as it planned to remount the show. $8,000 is a lot to her, too.
It's Mike's salary. I don't get paid for doing my year's worth of work on that show.
Why did groups use brown paper tickets? The service was founded in 1998 in Seattle. It calls itself, quote, the Fair Trade Ticketing Company. Brown paper operates round the clock, which small nonprofits can't do. And its fee is just 99 cents per ticket plus 5% of the ticket price, cheaper than other services. That pleased clients like Corning.
They, frankly, charged people like you, the consumer, the ticket buyers, less money.
Early this year, when the pandemic struck, Brown Paper posted a statement on its website apologizing for its missed payments. It blamed a, quote, catastrophic failure of our automated systems. And it said, quote, we are working hard to make it right. But many say the company has yet to follow through. The Andrew Carnegie Free Library and Music Hall in Carnegie says Brown Paper owes it about $2,500. Music Hall Director Melanie Paglia reached out months ago.
But, you know, as the weeks wore on, they just stopped communicating altogether. They stopped replying to emails, and then they cut off access to phone calls as well.
Nationally, the Better Business Bureau has fielded 360 complaints about Brown Paper in the past year. About 500 parties have complained to the Attorney General in Washington State, where the firm is based. The AG's office says it's gotten refunds for, quote, many complainants for sums ranging from $50,000 to $40,000. However, these are informal complaint processes. Brown Paper also faces two lawsuits over its practices. Both were filed in Washington State. One is a class action suit by two ticket buyers on behalf of all customers who didn't get refunds. The other suit was brought by 16 event producers who claim they too were stiffed. They want Brown Paper's assets put in receivership until everyone is repaid. A lot of money is involved. In an emailed statement, Brown Paper says it has paid more than $1.5 million to ticket buyers and event organizers since April. The company says it is issuing refunds and payments daily. For most groups, however, there's nothing to do but see what happens, says Stage 62's Seth Laidlaw.
We're sort of in a waiting game, a limbo right now.
Other groups are moving forward as best they can during a pandemic that limits indoor gatherings. The Carnegie Music Hall in Carnegie plans an outdoor concert in October, says Melanie Paglia.
We don't have a ticketing service right now, so I will take that up. I don't have too much else going on right now, so I'll take reservations by phone.
It's the first time in years they aren't using brown paper tickets. I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.